This is Labor Day weekend. It's raining. There are a few of us here, but you are a faithful lot. And we will remember that Labor Day is a time when we are called to reflect upon our own labor, to take a break from it, to possibly consider new ways of working for the year ahead, and certainly to be reflective of all who labor with us. As a model for one of those ways that we may think about how we might work differently, I come to you this morning with a different sort of sermon. I've been working differently on this sermon than I normally do. I'm going to ask for your presence and your patience and your prayers. Most of you know that I'm a writer. I have written no manuscript for today. It's a leap of faith that I take with you here on this Labor Day weekend, and so I'll ask you to pray for your preacher as I pray for you. Will you join me in prayer? O God, you come to us and stir our hearts. We ask for your word to be presence, for our presence to be our worship, and for you to grant that the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable unto you, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Most of us know a thing or two about call narratives. They're familiar, they're stories, they're some of my favorite stories in the text, and we know some of the more famous ones by heart. We know what happens when Samuel is called from the night, when God says, Samuel, Samuel, and Samuel responds, here I am. We know what happens when Jonah is called, and what happens when he doesn't listen. And this morning we heard about Moses' call narrative. We heard about Moses being called out of a burning bush on a mountain. Moses, Moses, God begins. And what we know about most call narratives is that they tend to kind of happen in the midst of our daily lives, that they happen in the midst of our work, that most people, when they are called by God, are going about doing their own sort of business. What's different about Moses, however, is that Moses isn't doing his business. He's taking care of the business of his father-in-law. Our text today in Exodus begins, Moses is tending the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, on Mount Horeb. And it's important to note that this isn't his flock. This is his father-in-law's flock. And Moses, by this point in our story, has had a few father figures. It's not surprising that we get a third today. His father at birth is Amram, who is the father of Moses and Miriam and Aaron. And of course, we know about that father figure, Pharaoh, in whose palace Moses spent much of his childhood. But here in this text, Moses is tending his father-in-law's flock, doing his father-in-law's business, and God comes to Moses. And in that coming, the text does this interesting bit of transition. It switches the grammar. There's a transformative property that's present in how this works. Chapter 3, verse 1 is, Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian, and he took his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of the Lord. Notice that the way that it works, even in the English, which is similar to how it worked in the Hebrew, is that it was his father-in-law's flock, and it became his flock within the same sentence. The writer doesn't go back and correct whose flock it is, but rather muddies the question of whose flock it is. The text first describes it to Jethro and then moves it to Moses without batting an eye. And this is interesting, because if you were one of those sheep, you probably wouldn't care that it was Jethro's flock that you were part of. You look to Moses as your shepherd. And all of us do this in similar ways, I think. We think about who it is that's leading us and who it is that loves us, and how it is that we will follow. And in this moment, where Moses is minding the business of Jethro, minding a flock that isn't his own and yet is his own, God calls, Moses, Moses. And Moses responds, here I am. And an interesting thing about this call narrative that is different from all other call narratives is the first thing God says to Moses is, take off your shoes. Remove your sandals, Moses, for where you are standing is holy ground. God has stripped down Moses in some way. God says, Moses, make yourself more vulnerable. Reach down, untie your sandals, and stand here on holy ground, ground that one can imagine might be warm to the touch. A bush that is not consumed is burning just a few feet away. And as Moses stands barefoot before God, God goes on to tell Moses what he is to do, what he is to do on God's behalf. And in this moment, God tells Moses to pay attention to yet another flock. Or in another way, Moses is given a flock of his own by God. And in this text, there's another bit of transformative grammar. This is not surprising. The way that the Bible writers work is that oftentimes we get these doublets throughout the ancient text, where one bit of grammar is carried forward later and we're meant to hear the two side by side. So just as the text begins with the call to Moses and the switch of the flock, here we get God saying, I am who I am, or in other translations, because that etra verb is infinitive. It can be, I will be what I will be, or I am which I am, or I will be who I will be. But the second time God says it, the second half of the phrase is dropped off. It becomes just I am. So when Moses is told to go to the Israelites, his people, his flock, God says, tell them, I am has sent you. And we hear in this a possessive sort of aspect where Moses becomes the caretaker of God's flock, speaks using God's own name, and loves as God loves. So whose flock is Moses to look after? No longer Jethro's, but now God's. And not just God's, but his. God delivers to Moses in this moment a call that is specific to him. And it's a wonderful thing. And one can imagine that as God never leaves anyone alone, no flock is ever left untended. Just as Moses is called away from those sheep, I imagine a new shepherd emerged. Someone who was just as excited about those sheep as Moses was excited and scared about the new flock, the Israelites. But in that moment, Moses still has a lot to wrestle with, and he asks God, how will I know that I'll be okay? You can hear the scared, the fright, very human emotions to a very godly thing to do. And God says, I will be with you. And we hear again the words of the 135th Psalm, nowhere can you go is away from God's presence. Now in our own time, we can imagine many flocks that need some tending. We think of the people in Houston or Charleston, the wayward flocks that wander around the halls of Congress, North Korea, Russia, South Sudan, Southeast Asia, so many places that need liberation and aid, so many flocks for God to tend, so many leaders that need to be needed. No one person can be a leader for all flocks. What we have to do is to pay attention to which flocks are ours and where we can be of value in the world. We have to listen and discern with and for the flocks that surround us. And in our own time, just like that time back then on the mountain of Horeb, God calls each of us. Moses, Barbara, Betty, Zach. God uses each of our names and calls us to places where we have not been before, but where we need to be to do God's work. This is the work of holy mystery and holy transformation that happens when we wholly listen to God. And in the midst of our daily lives, the daily lives where we might be doing somebody else's business, going about happily in our own lives, God reaches down and shows us still better ways. And how hard do we cling to our old flocks, to the places and people that we know, afraid of where it is that we will have to go, afraid of the fire that may consume us when we remove our shoes and encounter the divine. So now remember that Moses was stripped down and addressed and told to proclaim, I am who I am has sent you. I am has sent me. This naming is really important. In our second text this morning, we heard about Jesus and some naming that Jesus has done. Our text today comes just after the midpoint of Matthew's story, a point where Jesus has turned his sights and fixed his eyes on Jerusalem. It's a slow walk to the cross from where Jesus is in the story today. And if we remember back to last week, we'll remember that Peter had just named Jesus, the Son of God, the Messiah. And Jesus is doing some naming and calling as well. The disciples are given new charges. Jesus is walking forward with a faith and a conviction in who he is and who his call is. And all are paying attention. Jesus' identity is firmly fixed at this point. And he's calling us to pick up our crosses and to follow him. In that text that we heard, there's a lot of crosstalk that we hear today. And cross is a really vulnerable word. Like being barefoot before a fire. The cross is a vulnerable place. It's a place of death. It's also a place of resurrection. It is, in its very workings, a place of salvation. And Jesus says, if anyone want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and pick up their cross and follow me. And I want us to hear that really clearly this morning. Jesus says, if anyone wants to follow me, they are to pick up their cross and follow me. I think too often we hear this as pick up my cross and follow me. Too often we hear a fundamentalist sort of belief in the singularity of Jesus' cross, that we have to pick up that same cross with Christ and walk with him. But this isn't what Jesus says. Jesus says, pick up your cross. And this is harder work. Because first, we have to know what our own cross is. We have to because it's specific to us. Because God has given each of us a cross, something we carry, something deep down inside, something that may be the source of our undoing, but something that might also be the source of our transformation, something that may be our very salvation. Each of our crosses is different, just as each of us is different. And in this kind of diversity of crosses, we see a world of possibility that we can't imagine when we only have one. In this world of crosses that we're all carrying and all working and all laboring for, we see the possibility of ecumenical and interfaith work. We see God's great imagination at play as each of us has been given the keys to salvation in ways that are particular and specific to us. So Jesus says, pick up your cross. And together we all pick up our crosses, not to be Jesus or to carry Jesus' cross for him, but to pick up our own and to walk with Jesus as an ally. Each of us carrying our own crosses, each of us working towards the world of salvation, each of us looking to God. And this feels an appropriate lesson here on Labor Day weekend when we remember the labor unions and the work of what happens when multiple people come together singing the same song or remembering the same tune or saying the same words. But that fundamentalist reading of pick up my cross is sometimes what we hear. Sometimes fundamentalist statements are easier to hear than doing the work of identifying our own sense of faith, our own work in this world. And if you need an example of this, I'll point you to the news this week where you might have seen a story about the statement, the Nashville Statement, which was published on Tuesday. This is a statement published by the Coalition for Biblical Sexuality, which is a funny sort of name for an organization. And this statement applies the same cross to all people. It limits the diversity of God and it harnesses the expanse of creation as it kind of limits marriage to a man and a woman. It reclaims sexuality as something that is binary and didactic, something that isn't creative or expansive. It silences God's call and it leaves no work or no room for the working of God's grace in our world today. This statement was released on Tuesday in the midst of Hurricane Harvey, timing rather bad in my opinion, and in response, in very rapid response, a sea of other statements have been released. First came the Denver Statement, which was published by the Reverend Nadia Boltz Weber, who heads a church in Denver called the House for All Sinners and Saints. Soon after that, a Nazareth Statement was published. And what you see if you're paying attention to liberal or progressive Christian politics is this jostling that is happening within the world about what is really important to the Christian faith, how do we see God, and how do we live in response? These are all questions that are important because they're questions that help us think about what would be our own statement. Another way of thinking about this is, what are our own crosses? Who are our flocks? Who are the people that we work out our salvation with, and how might we get specific and vulnerable as each of us confront our own lives? What's the story of my cross? What's the story of yours? How might we share them together as the story of First Church? The Reverend Tracy Blackmon is the Executive Minister of Justice and Witness for the United Church of Christ. She's also the co-author of the White Privilege curriculum some of us will be using this fall to examine our own white privilege. She wrote a devotional recently that has been sticking around in my mind and in my heart. And in this devotional, she talks about leadership and followership, and she talks about the work of allyship, what it means to follow when we are trying to be faithful. She begins, and this text I bring to you, she begins by giving us the biography of Jesus as someone who came from the margins, which is to say a place of extreme vulnerability. Jesus, a brown-skinned Palestinian Jew from a working-class wrong side of the tracks family. And we remember that Moses, too, wasn't called from the comfort of Pharaoh's palace to lead the people. It wasn't until Moses became vulnerable that he didn't even have a flock of his own. He was tending that of his father-in-law. Out of that place of vulnerability, God calls Moses to lead his people out of Egypt. People from the margins, Reverend Blackmon often says, are called to lead and to call each other. And she says to those of us, she says, the invitation to the ally is always to follow the leadership of those who are at the center of the pain. Another way of saying this is that the ally must listen to the person who's carrying the cross. Jesus carried his cross. The disciples listened to him and followed him. Reverend Blackmon goes on, the story matters. And choosing to work toward liberation of any kind requires a commitment to support the narrative of the one who owns the story. The role of the ally is not to lead or to fix, she says. The ally holds the story and amplifies the voice of the storyteller. Pick up your cross and come be an ally. That's what Jesus says. And to do this, takes real work on each of our behalves. Work that we may not want to think about. It is Labor Day, but why not? Some of this work may include a pretty clear understanding of whose flock is ours and which cross are we each carrying. Put another way, this might be pick your battles wisely. But more thoughtfully, it might be, how much can each of us carry? How much can we carry in solidarity where we all carry not the one cross of Jesus, but each follow Jesus by carrying our own crosses? And together, we become flocks of people carrying our faith, carrying our crosses, vulnerable and open, ready for transformation. When we all do this, we have an ability to link arms, and to share our vulnerability, and to learn when to lead and when to follow. Now there is more than enough pain, more calls, more flocks needing tending, and more crosses to carry than any one of us could rightly do. We can't manage this all alone. So good news. There's also more possibility, more creation, more justice, more imagination, more good, more work than any of us is capable of doing alone. So we're never going to get there alone. We must join up as people of faith, as people of every faith, to do the work of God and God's creation. We can't be leaders for all people, no one can, but we can be leaders for our own people in our own time. We can't carry all the crosses, but we can recognize that each of us is carrying one, and see the vulnerability and the hurt in our friends' eyes. We can share the vulnerability and hurt that is our own cross. We can be allies to those on the margins. We can follow them when they speak and when they listen. We can listen to their pain. We can speak words of comfort to them. Most importantly, we can amplify their voices. We can lift our voices in support of their story, just as when we need help, they will amplify and support our story. This is faith. And a faithful response to the crosses and the flocks of our own time is to listen. To listen for when we are to follow, and to speak up and to work for when we are to lead.